What games have you worked on? I mean, you know, you mentioned winning 11 at Konami, but at Capcom as well. What games have you worked on? Which games and tracks are you really proud of? Because I know of your work before I contacted you, and I'm a massive fan of your contributions to Street Fighter V. Like, the Zeku theme is so... It's one of my favorite themes. It's so good. And
that happens to be my favorite as well.
It's so good. Just go on. Which tracks are you really fond of, and which games that you've worked on are you really fond of?
All right, so let's start with the games. Like, we just make a little parade here. So, of course, Winning 11, Playmaker 2009, my first title. And then I was uncredited as an orchestrator for Winning 11, or Pro Evolution Soccer for the guys who doesn't know, from 2010 to 2012. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I get to do this very cute little game for Sega called Super Monkey Ball 3D.
Which
turned out to be a release launch title. Actually, at the moment it was just called Monkey Ball, but for me, I didn't know.
For the GameCube, it was 3DS. A launch title.
Oh, for the 3DS.
Right, because the GameCube one came out in the early 2000s, but Super Monkey Ball 3D on the 3DS. Mm. Right.
So, I mean, always when I get a project, it has a different title.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later I figure out, oh, so I've been writing for the launch title for the 3DS. Wow, okay, cool. Another reason for me to get a 3DS and just to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Sega comes back again through the agency. It's like, hey, do you know the Yakuza series? I
think.
Oh, yeah. They're doing a spin-off with zombies and stuff, you know. And it's like, we think you would be a great fit because, yeah, they heard all your styles. They want a little bit of Nine Inch Nails, a little bit of like industrial metal soundtracks. And so, yeah, I went on that, and I always thought, hey, that's a fun little offshoot. Nothing serious, right? But then I also realized we have started to get The Walking Dead and all these other zombie... It was just a whole way of zombie stuff coming to me.
Yeah.
Because the second thing that came to me was also the game written by James Gunn, Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yeah, by Suda51.
Exactly. Right? Grasshopper Manufacturing Suda51.
Yeah.
And that's like... When I first heard about this project, I imagined like, imagine a cheerleader walking around with a chainsaw, killing zombies and rainbows. I imagine like the people who did the game version of Something Something Versus the World, Scott Pilgrim.
Right.
I was imagining something along those lines, you know.
Yeah.
But when I got to see the game in action at the studio, I was like, wow, this is rad, you know.
Wacky game. It's like Suda51 with his game making sensibilities, is the ethos that drives him is, you know, punk is not dead. He always tries to inject his games with this really sort of out there, visceral, punkish sort of atmosphere. And he always tries to do something really different, which is, I'm a big fan of Suda51.
So, I mean, the game had like an initial idea for the music to be a driving factor as well, that the music would change. Every track that I write are duplicates, but the second version of the track has more intensive instruments on top to make it pop, right?
Music's always been a part of his games.
It turns out that, wow, this thing seems to be cutting, switching music every 5 or 10 seconds, you know. It's like it's almost insanity on display and listening to it sometimes.
So it must be hard to compose for a game like that, where the game is constantly changing the tempo and the pace of the music according to the player's actions.
Yeah, actually I was not aware that it would work like that in the game, because we were given one instruction that, okay, it's going to be a simple normal situation and high intense situation stuff, and we're just gonna morph the tracks in between. Like, you're just gonna bring that other track in and then morph it out when you're done killing all the enemies and walk into the next stage, right?
Yeah.
But it turns out that he had another idea in mind, and it means like cutting music in the game, so it became more like a collage version of music instead of having one single track morphing in and out for the. And I think he did the right choice, because I think it works for the aesthetic of the game as well. So but what even drove me to the project before he even said yes, I was like, oh, James Gunn wrote the script for this one. Mm. Like, okay, you know,
It is an Guardians insane Galaxy, story. It's a very James Gunn story. It's an absolutely insane story about, I think the main character's boyfriend is like this decapitated head, which he keeps on a belt buckle. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurdity how she, I'm just going to save you. I'm just going to chop your head off. And that's it. You know?
Yeah, problem solved.
Then we came to the big one that I ever had in my career, and that was Resident Evil 6.
Right.
And
that was a huge project for Capcom at the time. Yeah, I think they threw everything at that. It was like they really wanted to make it like a big, you know, cinematic Hollywood feature.
Yes, the way they explained it for us was dramatic horror.
Right, dramatic horror.
With elements from 24 and stuff like that, like counter-terrorist unit. And the thing is that we were sitting there. Actually, I was not supposed to be doing the project initially, and it turns out that the one of the lead composer for the game, Narita-san, he actually fought for me to be on the project. Very, very fun. But he said Narita picked me because I had a demo of the Casino Royale airport chase on my YouTube channel,
right?
And but it was the sound implementation manager who is responsible for get all the sounds into the game wasn't convinced that I was the right guy for the job. But anyway, we had this competition. I got in, and I think we're like 30 or 60 other composers from overseas that wanted to have one of the four spots for this project. And then we got there to our first meeting. The director talked to us, and this is what he had in mind, and he was explaining each character and their like sound palette musically, like, Leon Kennedy, he needs a lot of acoustic instruments and woodwinds, creaky, gothic feeling, and a very organic soundtrack.
Because there are three scenarios in that game, and they all have subtly different vibes. I mean, Leon's one is the more sort of classical survival horror style. Chris's campaign is more of a military action shooter, and I think it's Jake.
Yeah.
He has more of a sort of a, like, Nemesis style campaign where they're being chased by this big bad guy.
That was the thing. So I was like, sat there in the meeting, like, okay, well, I don't think I can do that. I don't have any good woodwinds until today.
Oh, wow. Yes.
This is how I do all my brass and stuff with Seku and flutes and things. So
nice.
Yeah. So I said, okay, I want to start on him.
Can I see that one more time?
Yeah, sure.
Like, So,
it's an EWI, electronic wind instrument, and this is basically just instead of playing the MIDI keyboard, I can play my instrument using breath.
Interesting.
And my saxophone techniques on these stuff here. So.
And that's how you did, I guess, the flute part on the Zeko theme.
Exactly.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So I mean, that's why I like to fool people around, like that. Like my brother, he's another. Like, I come from a music family, and my oldest brother's a trumpet teacher.
Yeah.
And for me, it's always been important to make sure that I don't play the parts as I would as a saxophone player.
Yeah.
So for me, it's always been about imitating the brass. And he asked, who did you hire to get on this, on the brass, or who did you do that? And I said, no, it's all me, you know? It's like, okay, all right. So I already had some guy checking my work out, so I can call it that. I got the part sounding right. Yeah. This is probably the thing. I mean, digital music in itself is very hard to make dynamic if you don't know your libraries or how to handle the each keyboard patch. So for me, I think that's the reason I got hired by Capcom, was I could make very dynamic soundtracks to imitate orchestra. And that's when we get to Chris Redfield's campaign. And I was like, oh, cool. That is my jam. Hollywood action. Okay, that's five stars. I got to talk to him about that. And then we got to Jake Mueller's campaign. He said we want something more macho, a little bit more aching towards Hong Kong action, or percussive-driven score like that.
Yeah.
I do have a guitar, but I'm not really a guitarist. So, okay. I don't know. And then they did a reveal. Oh, and then we have this. Ada Wong, Secret Campaign, high-tech spy thriller, right? Like, oh, definitely my jam. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so then we were done with that, and then we went eating dinner. And Narita-san looked at me, "Ha, you big stomach." I was like, "Okay, I know I gotta lose weight, right?" But then at the further end, between me and Narita-san was the sound director. And he was still not convinced that I was the right guy for the job. But Narita-san asked me, "Hey, do you have the Casino Royale trailer?" "Oh, I got my PSP right here. Sure, why not?" So he gave it to him. I was like, 10 minutes later, he gave me the thumbs up. And it's like, okay, I have no doubts about you anymore. Okay. Always good to hear. But man, they went all into the last second there for me to get the job. And so during production, I would say it was a great learning experience. I get to learn more about adaptive music. And and this is really the difficult part, like when the music becomes a thing that you as a player can kind of decide when the next piece will start and inject itself into the gameplay. That was something I was looking forward to. So they told us to, hey, look at Uncharted 2, play through the game, and notice what the music is doing. So I took like a few weeks to play through the game, and it's like, I couldn't figure it out what they were doing, how they could make the game and the music feel like it's never ending. It's always evolving. It's always... Like, so then we came back to the next meeting and they broke us down exactly how they did it. Like, okay, we have layers that we are switching out and in through, but it's this one song playing or one loop playing. It's always evolving that way. I thought, wow, that's going to be so cool. So the idea is that I have to write the layers at 100% intensity, and they would strip away maybe the brass, maybe the woodwinds or whatever, and then just have the ambient sound at the very bottom. Starts off the entire thing, and then layer it off, more action comes in. And then, so that's what I was working against. And then we received the game when it came out and released. We got a free copy, and I started playing it. I was like, wait a minute, my music is at full 100% blast, but I haven't even moved yet. It's like, then I start to see that, oh wow, I understand. I mean, PS3 at the time, we thought it was very powerful, but then comparing how many characters on screen in Uncharted versus Resident Evil 6. You have like 7 or 8 characters shooting at you. There are ambient surround noises, close mic, far away mic recordings going on at once. You have scripted speech. You have just NPCs screaming at you. And then like, okay, where does the music fit into this? So they probably had got into that, like, okay, the music is a hurdle for us. Let's just make it a stereo track and just play it. And that's what they did.
That's a bit sad. So they didn't. So I guess the PS3 didn't have enough processing power to do a truly sort of dynamic soundtrack along with, you know, what they were going for with, you know, in terms of graphics and
if they had less characters if they had less characters on screen, they could probably get it. But since Chris' campaign is so intensive, and actually all the campaigns had the same faith. Everything turned into stereo tracks. And I thought maybe they can redeem it when they do the re-release. And oh wow, the Nintendo Switch version on the Switch Lite looks great, sounds great, but it's still, no, they didn't do, they didn't implement the sound, the music engine the way they should have. But hey.
That's unfortunate.
I mean, so that's what I would say if they told us that, I'm sorry, we cannot do this idea, I would probably have rewritten almost all the tracks for the game for sure.
So they were designed to be adaptive, but in the end, they were just static.
Yeah, they were static, but the only adaptive element would be if they would go from one scene from the next. They managed to find a way to smooth the music transition from loop to loop. So that was the only thing. And I mean, sure, we all dreamed that we could have made this game. And I think the sound implementation team are probably like, why did we even try this idea? You know, but who knows? That's up to them. I don't really complain. I got to do the game and I was really happy. But of course, some people thought it was a dud. Some other people thought it was a complete turkey. For me, you know, I just think it supports the story for what it is. But for me, it's just having a good time and experiencing new ways of working for me. So I hate horror games. I can't even play them. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not a horror guy.
Did you play Resident Evil 7 or Village, the ones that came after 6? Because they really went to, especially with 7, like sort of a reboot of the series, they really did a real hard turn into horror, and that game is genuinely scary.
Yeah, I was actually supposed to be part of 7 when it was in a different stage, but once PT got retracted, you know,
right.
That's when Captain decided, hey, we're going to take that first-person view. And
So PT really did affect the development of Resident Evil 7?
I think so, because at the moment, I was supposed to be writing music for the game, but then they decided, we're not going to have any music now, all of a sudden. So it was like, around there, I was asked if I wanted to do music for the game. I was like, yeah, sure. And I think a game like that, that's first-person view, it needs to be an immersive experience. The music wouldn't make any sense otherwise. So I think they did the right decision again here.
Yeah.
One of my friends are the actor Jacobs, and she plays the girlfriend who gets psychoed, you know.
Psycho
girlfriend. Yeah.
The wife?
I forgot. I haven't played the game, but but her likeness, I was like, oh, there's Ananda, my friend. Like, oh shit, man. So she must have had a blast acting out the game and all these stuff. So yeah, that was fun. But man, I'm scared of horror games. It's like even the first Resident Evil game at all on the PlayStation, which I got the Windows version for, when those dogs jump in from the window, I'm like, I'm out.
Iconic moment. I remember playing that. I must have been, how old? It came out in 1995. It was one of the earliest PlayStation games. Around, or 6, 1996. So I would have been around like eight years old at that time. And I remember playing it and just being absolutely terrified. It was...
When you don't have the control of the camera, that really hypens up. That's like, oh shit, I'm locked in.
It heightens a sense of claustrophobia, and there's a real cinematic element to it where the designers can pick exactly which camera angle you're looking at. Now it's all free camera, and
and the more control you have over the situation, the less scary it becomes. So that was basically that. So I got to write for Chris and Ada, and then during the development, I think we spent like 1.5 years writing music for it over. But then Narita-san realized I didn't get to write enough music, so he offered me if I want to write music for the online modes as well. I was like, oh, cool. All right, well, sure. I'll do it. And suddenly it became a kind of a little bit of a hit, one of the songs there. So, yes, I'm happy that he let me take responsibility for 80% of that. So this was 2012, but now we're coming into... like a dead period. The PlayStation 3 is retiring, and a lot of things are changing the way games are being made. The DLC controversy on Resident Evil 6. Yeah, that was big news.
And I believe Street Fighter Cross Tekken, had its own big DLC controversy with, people upset about characters being on disc but having to be unlocked through DLC codes effectively.
But anyway, I didn't buy it at the time, but today I got it on PS Vita. I'm so sad that PS Vita was not supported so much, but I enjoy the game immensely. It's pretty cool.
PS Vita is a really underrated console, I think. It had a lot of potential to it, but I guess it was released just as the smartphone market was really taking off, and people didn't really see any more use for a dedicated handheld console anymore. I think Nintendo did something quite smart with the Switch, where it's like, well, it can be a home console or a portable console, depending on how you see it. Yeah,
I'm getting really excited because, I really like to have the latest version of the Switch. And all black, having one at my office, and then just bring it home during the weekends, there's something cool. Nintendo, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, Nintendo's always been like, oh, we're a family-friendly corporation. But now, like, oh no, we can have some bloody games on this thing, Assassin's Creed and GTA and whatever M-rated thing that you can think of. It's like, okay, Nintendo are cool in my book right now. So that's awesome. So that was a big transition. So that means I was now slated to write more music for the, as you said, more like the smartphone, iOS platforms. A lot of games that didn't even make it overseas. I got to write for Pachinko machines, and actually two of the machines that killed some famous series as well. And Jim Sterling, well, you recall Jim Sterling, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, news about them killing Silent Hills.
Ah.
I was like, wait, that's my Pachinko machine I wrote music for. I was like, oh, shit.
you did the music for the Silent Hill Pachinko machine?
Yes, I did. I was like, first, I thought, hey, we're going to write music for a real Silent Hill game, Akira Yamaoka and all that stuff.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But when I found out it's a Pachinko machine, my heart sank. But I couldn't say anything about it. You know,
I bet. Yeah.
But it's still very funny.
It's got that. What is it? The pull the lever meme. Where
exactly.
It's like, yeah.
Pull the lever. Noise. I mean, I don't understand the point. I've been writing music for a lot of Pachinko machines, even the. One of the Samurai Showdown Pachinkos. I did the main title sequence for it. Nobunaga's Ambition. Like they put a lot of money into having a machine that sounds great orchestrally and put money to arrangement.
You know, it's a noisy environment, a pachinko parlor. So you got to stand out, and the soundtrack is important in grabbing people's attention.
But I cannot hear shit when I walk into the pachinko parlor because all the smacking balls.
It's a cacophony it's a white of noise. Sounds. Yeah.
It's a white noise of balls.
Yep.
White noise of balls. That's a great title. I'm gonna
that's a sound
save
bite.
It. Note
a sound
to
bite.
Myself. There you go. So I was in this dead area for a while.
I think the whole in general, like around the tail end of the PS3 sort of life cycle, like the Japanese gaming industry was in a real state of sort of flux and adapting to, you know, it had a bit of a transitional period, a bit of a teething period.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why a lot of developers started for smartphones and stuff. So yes, I have a lot of stuff that didn't make it out to the rest of the world, which I find kind of sad. But hey, I'm writing for the Japanese market, not the world market.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. You can also watch our podcasts over on YouTube at That Blasted Salami. Have an excellent day, and we'll catch you next time.